welcome back to episode 199 of the BlockRunner podcast. Here's where we discuss the latest development in cryptocurrency while we make this new technology relatable to you. You can watch this podcast on YouTube to follow along with our discussion. Another way to stay up to date is by signing up to our newsletter at theblockrunner.com. As always, we have your host, William, talking to your co-host, Iman. And here are some of the topics they discuss today. First up, exploring the exciting topics like AI, fusion energy, bioengineering, and the cosmos, and why these could be even more enthralling than crypto. Next, the role of fleece machines in the crypto realm, considering their influence on market liquidity and innovation. Then discussing the transformative potential of nanotech, the importance of Bitcoin in guiding market sentiment, and the game-changing role of Layer 2 solutions in the crypto economy and metaverse. And finally, the Bitcoin's market trends, its untapped potential, and a vision of digital market revolutionizing our physical world. All right, let's listen in.
Welcome back to another episode of the BlockRunner podcast. I'm your host, William, always here with your co-host, Iman.
What's going on, dude?
On the sticks, we got TJ.
Hello.
No interview today, dude. We're supposed to be interviewing Bitfinity at some point. Probably going to be on Monday-ish.
Yeah, we're going to really get into the weeds of
ICP,
which, I don't know, it's been like daunting for whatever reason for as long as we were introduced to it, like a couple years ago. It's like it hit the market at like 20, 30 billion or something. And we're like, what the WTF, mate.
And then a straight dumping to like a 2 billion.
Something like that. But we've always been told about how potentially groundbreaking it can be, right?
Yeah.
And we've been hearing like little whispers within our own like ordinals circle that we've built over the year. It's like, hey, ICP might actually be of some use and some value to what we're doing. Right.
That's what it seems. That's what a lot of smart people are saying.
Exactly. Yeah. These are like not just your typical people in the circle.
Moon boys.
Yeah. These are really smart people that we respect. So it's like, it definitely is galvanizing our interest to investigate like for real this time.
Yeah. We have to. We have to.
Yeah. So it starts with Bitfinity, I guess, because they're actually building within the ICP ecosystem. And so they should know a thing or two.
Yeah. They're working with Bob Bodily on Bionic.
Yeah, Bob's definitely another one we got to get onto the show too, because I mean we're gonna reference some of his tweets here.
Yeah,
in the L2 discussion that is like obviously very dominant right now within the Bitcoin space. Because I mean it was inevitable. L2s are just it's just so encompassing and so captivating for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean as far as like L2s go, you know the whole sort of like conversational piece about ordinals is that it's supporting the miners and supporting Bitcoin indefinitely. And then you have like the idea of L2s. It's like, let's just bridge all our assets from Bitcoin to an L2. It's like, so what does that mean to the miners?
Or what does that even mean? Like, period. So there's like a L2s to me sounds a lot like, remember like metaverse?
Yeah.
Where like everybody was just like claiming metaverse and like 100%. Everything they were doing. It's like, yeah, it's this like is a metaverse.
Coca-Cola is building a metaverse.
Everybody built a metaverse, and really once you realize what they were really building was just another game with like some NFTs part of their ecosystem or whatever. It's like that's not really the metaverse if you actually understood truly understood the foundational like elements that make up a metaverse. So are you showing what like we're actually jumping around in here, right?
Yeah, we are.
Is this a metaverse, dude?
This is it. This is what the metaverse looks like, folks.
Okay.
It's an empty canvas of,
of
massive potential.
Mass potentiality. So I'm in here. You're in here.
Yeah, this is it.
So we're jumping around. So this is like a Bitmap OS, and it's like earliest versions on display. And yeah, it is massively empty. But just to kind of close the thought of like comparisons, like L2, it's a buzzword just like Metaverse was for a while.
Yeah.
And yet literally anybody is just like leveraging it in their marketing to attract, you know, attention and therefore liquidity and developers and activity and yada, yada, yada. Like this is how Web3 rolls.
Yeah. Right?
Capitalize on the trends. And looks like we're reconnecting here, dude.
Oh, yeah. The server must be rebooting.
Okay.
It's like there's people here.
It's like, get off my land, dude. I don't like this activity.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll talk about L2s later. I guess once let's start off with some NAT stuff, dude.
Yeah. So over the, I guess, last 24 hours, 48 hours, there has been a blockening, another blockout.
Oh, okay. I was like, you just invented another term and you didn't tell me, dude? It's a blockening? I thought we called these blockouts.
Yeah.
We do, right? We still call them blockouts.
So NatCats.
This one's different.
Yeah, NatCats had blocked out in like a matter of a couple of hours since our video, which we didn't expect, we didn't intend. We were just talking about cool stuff happening within the DMT ecosystem.
Yeah, of course, this specific NAT stood out because with it came a good Git book, and with that came like a an art rendering like platform mm-hmm. where you enter in a block number where these patterns exist, and then mm-hmm. it generates you a unique cat.
Yeah.
Right? And so it fulfilled all the things we were kind of expecting to happen down the line with unique non-arbitrary tokens, but we weren't anticipating it to kind of like come to fruition until way down the road. You know, first it's like, let's actually deploy.
Yeah.
So there's like an understanding of like what can be done. And then we'd have to demonstrate a little bit ourselves. We're not artists, but we could try. We could try to leverage this new framework component to create something of artistic attempts. Semblance of art, right? And just offer it to the cryptoverse and see what you guys can come with, the real artists, right?
Right.
Well, then we haven't even
front ran.
We haven't even hit step one.
Yeah.
Of like deployment of the actual understanding part. You know, like the Git book hasn't been updated.
Correct.
And I think we have like potentially the universe has delivered us one of the best showcases of like why.
Yeah.
We're changing the framework in the first place, right?
Yeah, so these NatCats represent art pieces that are based off of data on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And they only exist if this pattern is found in the bits field, the 3B. So if you look at the bits field, it comes natively as hex.
Yeah.
And this element says, if 3B exists within the hex data type of bits field, mm-hmm. then the cat exists. And so
the cat and the non-arbitrary token, like correct. The fungible token.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing within like that deployment, that hybrid token deployment that distinguishes whether or not it should be referencing some other value for fungible token mm-hmm. genesis. Like right now, it's basically pattern equals two things, right?
Yes.
It is the mint itself.
Which is the art piece.
Yeah. Well, at least it will, not yet, but it will be down the line once we actually like incorporate this. And then like the fungible token, which just like any other non-arbitrary token, right? That is what determines its mm-hmm. supply existence.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, dude. It's like, man, now like we have like so many new verticals of exploration and experimentation, right?
Yeah. So this is the first time on Ordinals that we have this hybrid token economy where you launch an art piece or content or whatever. It could be a 3D model, could be an application, could be art. And then as in the same throw of the launch, you have the art and you have a fungible token.
Yeah.
And those are completely separate pieces. So it's not to be confused with ERC-404, which is like fractionalization process in a smart contract. These are completely two different things.
Yeah.
Right. Fractionalization comes with a bunch of regulatory baggage, which I don't like to get into.
Yeah.
And so
no need for none of that.
Yeah. But if somebody is really interested in fractionalization, I think you could come up with a way to do that.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to.
Yeah. So this is definitely like groundbreaking in the sense like, you know, it sets the stage just like, you know, we put out there the NAT token. The first non-arbitrary token is like a demonstration, right? Like this is, we did this, but there's so many different variations of how you could do the same thing basically and deploy a non-arbitrary token.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you're interested in what we've done and like here's like the documentation of how we did it.
Yep.
Here are the framework and the steps of how you can actually deploy one of your own and what you do with that and how you interpret like where, how do I add new value out of this like new mechanism? That's completely up to the deployer, right?
Yes, that's right.
Same thing with the art side. It's like, okay, yeah, these NatCats are cool. People like them. They blocked out like almost very quickly, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I have another interpretation of how I could leverage on-chain data to manifest something cool, right?
Yeah, what's cool about this is that, minting a NatCat wasn't as simple as like clicking a mint button, right? You'd actually have to go and look at the different potential blocks that have that pattern. And so what people did was they created a dashboard on Genie Data, and they helped provide at least a starting point for searching whether or not this block contained that pattern.
Yeah, that helped a lot.
Yeah.
It always helps a lot. So Genie Data is like an incredibly good tool because the community can always supply that kind of assistance when it comes to, like, you know, these new discoveries for non-arbitrary patterns and such. So it's happened time after time again. So that's becoming like a pretty permanent part of the ecosystem, I think, just spinning up these dashboards. And, you know, there's a collective effort of coming to that final discovery point of, like, you know, how many of these actually exist. And that's kind of the cool. That's the cool factor, right?
Yeah.
Whenever something deploys or mints for the first time, everybody's kind of working together. Of course, the incentive to kind of like contribute to this discovery and search is to claim your own share of these mints, right? So everybody's equally incentivized to engage in this type of activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people are a little bit more equipped, right? They're like data. They have like data backgrounds and such.
Yeah, data engineers.
So they do have kind of like an advantage for sure.
Yeah.
In this like this asset generation space, more so than like typically before, it's just like who has the fattest wallet really is like dictates like who's gonna have the largest share of ownership in any like newly deployed asset, you know?
Yeah, and that presents an opportunity for us to make it easier for everybody, make it a level playing field. And so eventually, once this all of this becomes mature, a new token will launch. There's going to be an interface where it will show you all the blocks where that pattern exists, and then you just select and mint them.
Yeah, you kind of have like a showcase of that a little bit, don't you?
Yeah. Or? So for example, on Bit, you click on Bit. Let me zoom out, and then here's an example. All these like gray blocks, they've already been minted out.
Yeah.
Right.
So but this is Bit Mint. So there's a 9% progress to this block out, right?
Yeah.
It means.
And look at all this, man. This is 10% of 800,000, 80,000 mints.
Yeah. It's a lot of blocks. And this thing goes like to the right a little bit too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So there's a lot of these blocks that have been claimed. So this is basically like a replication of what happened for the NAT token. Same thing, same element.
Yeah.
Same supply of Bit tokens as there are NAT tokens.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, this is going to become like, I think, the permanent interface experience, like you're saying, for everybody to kind of like engage, and now everyone can participate in this search, right?
Yeah. So what happens with this is like in the next update, which will happen in the next couple of days, is that when a new mint occurs, you'll be able to just like click through a bunch of these squares, and there's going to be a little button here, is a check pattern.
Yeah.
And then the system will tell you, is like, yeah, there's no pattern here, or there is a pattern here, and if there is, you could just click inscribe, and then you can own.
And there's like a color scheme to that too, right? Like if there is a pattern, these will be turned to green squares, I think.
Yeah, green outlines.
Green outlines.
Yeah.
And then if there is no pattern within the square, you're like...
Turns red.
Turns completely red, filled with red.
Yeah, and what you'll see here is that because this is like crowdsourcing pattern discovery, when you, on your computer, you're clicking around and you find some red stuff, once you like move on and search for other stuff... And I go to the same page, it'll be red for me as well.
Like instantly, or you have to do a refresh?
Well, it'll be a refresh, yeah.
Okay. But basically, it's like a shared discovery process across anybody's interacting with this, like this environment, basically.
Right.
It's like a block environment. Oh, here we go. I see some orange now.
There it is. Yeah. So these are all available to mint.
The orange ones.
The orange ones, yeah.
Yeah. So we've reached the point where now it's like, okay, people are... kind of past like minting the early blocks. Now they're probably looking for, I don't know, very specific like numbers.
Pattern have, sequences, yeah.
Yeah, things like that. Things that have some sort of like block tribute angle to them, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like how Bitmap happened. So, yeah, this is going to be like a tool for any NAT deployment in the future. And, of course, like not all these blocks will start out gray, right, for every pattern or every NAT?
No. They will not.
Because not every pattern exists in every block.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So that's part of the whole cool factor, right? This is figuring that out, discovering where the assets lie. And yeah, in the future, when the UNAT stuff is much more integrated for mScribe, you're going to actually be able to click on a block and see the unique art piece there.
Correct.
Yeah.
Did you know that we're more than just a YouTube channel? We also built Mscribe, the first inscription platform built from the ground up for the metaverse on Bitcoin. Connect your bitmap ordinals and use our tools to bring your community into the virtual realm. Support us by joining the movement at mscribe.io. Like, comment, and subscribe for the latest alpha. Back to the video.
That's gonna be cool.
Yeah, so you click on one of these blocks and then a little pop-up will show up with the actual art piece.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is... what's cool about this is that it's brand new. We've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
Like in crypto before. So,
and it's interesting to work on, right? It's like always thinking of
new stuff. What can you do with this new stuff?
Yeah, I like this. We had this conversation with the team like yesterday. It's like, because we're doing something completely new, there's like a pretty persistent trail of like times where we have to be innovative.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where we can't like reference or rely on things that already exist, because truly this is unique and original, right?
Yep.
And it's like, damn, now we have to kind of like invent every like forward step on our own,
yeah,
without like too much reliance on like outside context, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very difficult.
Yeah, right? Not only like the challenge of like implementing this technically, it's the challenge of the user interface, which is an underdog in like consideration,
mm-hmm,
because like, for example, when it comes to minting this stuff, and let's say like we're using parent child infrastructure, like you need to show confidence that you're going to receive the asset that you just paid for.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because technically on the back end, it's a very complex situation that has to happen technically in order to issue you a child token of an asset.
And there's like a time component to that too, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me of like the Nifty Gateway days.
Yeah.
Because I had my own like user experience involved with that, where it's like I minted this NFT.
Well, you had to send them your assets first.
Right.
So first you had to trust Nifty Gateway.
I did.
Right.
But because there was a lot of like action.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of liquidity on that exchange.
Yeah, Beeple was on there. That's where you got the, what's it called?
It was like a infected Pikachu or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe infested. It was like...
it was like an actual hardware piece too.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, right? And there was a lot of tech. And that was like one of the first NFTs I really kind of like aped into.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like I want to say a $400 or $800 purchase.
It was, yeah. Something like that, yeah.
That resulted in like 40, 50, 60,000,
yeah,
maybe even higher. I think it went as high as like 300,000 or 400,000. But of course I sold mine way earlier.
Yeah.
I didn't get to enjoy that feeling of like,
yeah,
euphoria.
I remember the despair like it was yesterday.
Do you remember that? Right.
Yeah.
I think we even made a video like how I lost.
You fumbled $100,000 NFT or something.
Something like that. There's a video on our channel somewhere. It's like how I lost $250,000 on an NFT.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, there's definitely like a despair period where I was like, God dang it, man.
Yeah, but you actually made money though, like when you sold it.
Of course, but...
But it wasn't like a 100X.
It wasn't a Lambo.
No.
Right?
That's the goal, right? It's a Lambo.
That's the only goal. That's the only utility of crypto.
Yeah, that's right.
To acquire Lamborghinis.
That's right.
That's the whole point. But yeah, that user journey experience is like, I guess part of the purchasing process is like, they just kind of left me in limbo for like... A couple of hours where it's like, okay, I sent them my money and then they didn't really tell me like how long it's going to take for me to receive that asset. And
yeah,
I was like, dude, they could have at least added like a status bar or something just to kind of,
yeah,
like you're saying, inspire some confidence that,
sure,
I didn't just get rugged.
Right.
Because Nifty Gateway was pretty new at the time.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, shit. Yeah,
it was before they got an investment from the Winklevi, yeah, and like all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Before they were like the talk of the town of like the NFT mania. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. The user experience, the interface, all that stuff is like critical, right?
It's very, very critical.
Yeah.
So all that stuff we have to consider when designing, you know, anything DMT, NET related. And it's definitely not easy, but it's actually very interesting, fun to work on because it's like, yeah, new stuff. And
yeah, I totally agree. And yeah, I just kind of wanted to like check the team a bit. It's like, are you guys like, does this frighten you? This idea, yeah, of like, we're in a perpetual innovation space, meaning like moving forward, no matter what, like pretty much everything we do from here on out is like, we're going to have to innovate.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. It's like, this is a reality. It's like, so that what that means is like actual hard work.
Effort. Thinking.
Yeah. It's a lot easier to just copy and pasta.
Yeah.
Things that have been innovated in the past, right? Then yeah. we're seeing that with like pretty much most L2 activations that are happening in the crypto space. Specific, you know.
Well, the biggest one was PFP projects. There's almost a million PFP projects,
mm-hmm.
and they're all 10K roughly.
Right. Yeah. So you replicate what has already like demonstrated to be successful, right? Mm-hmm. Why do you do that? Because I mean, it's easier for one.
It's easy to understand. The market has understood like the mechanics of like all this stuff.
The first movers have already like went through the brunt of like educating the masses of like
innovating.
That is part of the innovation. Yeah. So the innovation doesn't just come in like the product delivery.
Yeah.
The innovation also has to come from like the marketing and like the
that's right.
The PR the teaching, and communications and
the
stuff.
The education of it.
Yeah, because you're literally you're breaking through like people's mental barriers, right? Like people don't like the idea of change or like new stuff.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time educating on like the whole concept of non-arbitrary tokens. Like, why is this non-arbitrary?
Correct. Yeah.
Like, how does this qualify as non-arbitrary?
Yeah, so we literally have to battle through the minds of basically everybody who's ever done anything with crypto.
Yeah, anything new, we have to do that with bitmaps. There's so much hate around it. Now there's like almost no hate.
I wouldn't go that far.
Almost no hate.
Almost.
Right? There are competitors to Bitmap who actively hate.
Yeah. Yeah, the hate was strong in the beginning for sure.
Yeah.
But that's just because the community did such a good job of doing that. Like the innovative approach of how do you educate people on why there's value here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it took some time. It took a lot of like ruffling of feathers, a lot of like internal gripe within this like ordinal space. People were literally like at each other's heels and like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like that guy anymore because he doesn't think like me.
Right, you know? Right.
A lot of that. And we're seeing that with L2 again. It's like
I wonder why that is, dude. Why can't we tribalism? Why can't we have like different opinions? Like, why is that so bad? Because it potentially hurts your bag. That's why. Bag bias.
Well, there's bag bias. I think it's just an innate like behavioral trait to people, right? We see it outside of the realm of crypto. It's like claim your tribe.
Yeah, but why can't you have a difference of opinion on stuff? Like my thing is like maybe L2s are not going to be all that useful, right? Because in the long term of things, miners need to increase the security of Bitcoin. And if we move all our assets to an L2, where is that security going to come from at this point?
Well, it would be okay if like the L2s like still transacting with Bitcoin, right? Therefore, like there's still fee generation.
Which that means there's only like less than a handful of L2s who consider that.
Right, right, right.
And I'm talking about like one.
Well, yeah. So there's different verticals, I'm sure, where that whole ethos can be maintained. But you're right. You're extracting liquidity. But it's a trade-off, right? A scenario where you're I guess, running the risk of exposing more value to the miners and you know, taking that away from them for providing more value to the users, I guess, right? And with like user experience enhancements and more liquid environments and such, right? At the end of the day, do you don't think somehow that can propagate back to the miners at the end of the day? It has to, right?
I don't know.
I mean,
think about it. If you're creating an ecosystem on L2 and like you have all this like action, like let's say metaverse ecosystem, like all this is happening, Bitcoin doesn't necessarily know or is benefiting from any of that stuff?
Well, just from like the roll-up, I guess, transactions, right? That eventually make its way to Bitcoin.
Yeah, but if you're rolling up 100,000 transactions and you're making one single transaction on Bitcoin, you are limiting its potential security.
By what? By just basically taking money out of the pockets of the miners, is what you're saying.
Yeah, because the miners are not getting 100,000 transactions. They're getting one.
Right. Yeah, but maybe at some point, if there's that much like activity happening, I don't think there's ever going to be a case where like Bitcoin is just like not getting its fair share of like fee activity, right?
What'd I don't know.
I guess that's one of the unforeseeable like outcomes of all this.
Yeah. You know? I mean, if L2s are really that needed, then that means less transaction on Bitcoin. I mean, ultimately. Right.
Yeah, ultimately, there's that security trade-off with like the miners themselves, but there's a security trade-off with the actual users themselves too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trusting centralized counterparty risk.
Sequencers and such?
Yeah. Well, that and just making sure your multi-party signature address is secure. Yeah. And then you're trusting the people, the multi-sig, who are holding the multi-sig keys.
Yeah.
Right. And they could collude. They could.
So then why do we do this then as like an ecosystem? Like rush these deployments? I mean, it's...
Well, I think it's like it's an opportunity, right? It's a blue skies and rainbows situation. It's like you have your bag and it's like worth, you know, $1,000. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, cool. I have $1,000. But what if I can turn that $1,000 to 100K?
Right? Doing what exactly?
The blue skies and rainbows, dude. That's how you do it.
Okay. So like, right? I need to deploy that $1,000 into something.
That gives me that chance. Even if it's like a 0.01% chance, you at least have a shot.
Basically something with the fi at the end of it.
Yeah.
Some sort of GameFi, metaverse fi,
yeah.
DeFi, some sort of like derivative value extraction out of like a base yeah. root asset that I may own. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is largely what crypto has kind of like turned into. So
mm-hmm.
of course there's market demand for these types of activities. Like we don't want to just sit around on like, you know, these kind of like dumb assets that don't really do anything.
Sure.
We always need this constant like sense of progression, like we're heading towards this like yeah. utopia where like we could just spin up derivative value indefinitely through these like different, you know, yeah. primitives that we conjure up.
Yeah, you're talking about like liquid staking protocols like on Ethereum, where you have an asset and then you create a derivative asset from that asset that you staked, yeah. and all of a sudden, you know, it's blue skies and rainbows, right? Potentially,
yeah. And then these things can be like packaged together even further down the line and
yeah.
like new investment vehicles and such. So this is like how finance like operates.
Exactly.
So yeah. that is the blue skies you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, we need to get to that as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Right. And in exchange, it's like we're sacrificing a few things that are, I guess, important to some, but not important to others. Things like security.
Yeah.
And things like decentralization and stuff. Right.
Correct.
That's always been like the,
yeah, because, you know, those trade-offs are okay if you're motivated by generating as much money as possible, like flipping tokens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So those trade-offs are fine, but it doesn't really move the ball forward when it comes to, like, progressing the whole ecosystem, right?
It depends. It depends how you look at it from that context. It's like, okay, there might be these deployments that aren't considering maybe security as much as they should be. So it's like... maybe some critical vulnerability gets discovered as a result. A lot of people lose a lot of money, mm-hmm. right? I feel like that maybe those are the types of like galvanizing events
yeah.
that kind of like conjure up new development and new innovation.
See, I don't know.
Push the ball forward a bit.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, what I mean? And I agree for sure. It's just we've seen these events happen in the crypto already.
We have.
And they happen almost on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And people keep on getting burnt.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, which is why I think my thesis here is that people know that this is a risk and they take that risk anyways because of the blue skies and rainbow scenario.
Correct. Yeah. Like things like this makes it a little more like it makes like things that Casey says about, you know, fungible tokens and such make a lot more sense. Like the like really well, everything we see is just like a nice wrapper for like
a casino,
really deploying like virtual casinos.
Yeah.
he says that, and like
I mean he's not the only one that says that.
No, correct, but that's really what it feels like. It's like whenever yeah. somebody deploys or activates like a new L2 or L3 or whatever, it's literally it feels like a new casino has just like been erected.
Yeah,
I think in Las Vegas Boulevard.
I think that's exactly what's happening.
Right, so it's like, okay, let's create these mechanisms to attract as many new wallets,
yeah.
you know, users, customers to our casino.
Yeah.
By any means necessary, right?
Yeah.
And once they're there, now it's like, now, you know, the slot machine providers, the dApp developers, whatever, the yield farming mechanizers,
yeah.
they're going to show up and they're going to provide the entertainment.
Sure, sure.
For this new class of casino inhabitant, right?
Yeah. And what's tricky about this casino opening up is that it is masquerading as innovation and like this yeah. is the way forward.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, right? That's a problem because it fleeces people.
But it doesn't at the same time. It does eventually in some way or another.
So but ultimately, like, it does, right?
I guess. If what do you mean by fleece? Meaning, like, eventually people will get burnt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like casinos, right? Kind of.
Well,
it's
yeah.
an expected
it's
thing.
Like a casino, yeah.
Yeah. Where, but some people don't get burnt. Some people get really sure, lucky and they yeah. make a lot of money, right?
Yeah, that's why casinos still have an existence.
A massive one, right? Yeah. So like this is
but the casino ends up winning, but I think the casino has a bad it's a bad analogy because it's as if maybe it's a good analogy. It's as if the people opening up casinos end up making a huge amount of money. And mm-hmm. I think that is the case.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a question of, okay, we've done a good job at deploying casino-esque, activities on-chain, off-chain, yeah. whatever. So, yeah, at some point, where do you come to a threshold of, like, where we're actually progressing towards something?
Yeah, right, exactly. You know what I mean?
How do we get past, like, all we're doing is just erecting new vehicles of entertainment
fleece
and fun,
machines.
Whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Fleece machines, I like that. That's a good band. Good name for a band. But yeah. How do we get to a point where it's like we're converting some of these fleece machines into like actual
like
substance of value. Like yeah. something of true value.
Yeah. True digital finance.
I don't know. Whatever that end goal is, where is that value derived?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's like, why are we here, basically?
Why are we here, dude? No, you just asked like the most challenging of questions of all time.
Yeah.
Why are we here? I don't fucking know, dude.
Or what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know?
You have an answer for me? Please help me understand, dude.
Well, it's like, when we're talking about, you know, somebody who, man, I was trying to think of this interview with Brian Armstrong. It was... the guys that we used to listen to, the four guys,
Oh my God. Oh, the fucking All In podcast?
All In podcast. Yeah. They interviewed Brian Armstrong.
I still listen to those guys, dude.
Yeah. I just haven't in the last couple of months.
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. I get it.
But they asked Brian Armstrong, they asked him, where are the products in crypto? We've been around 15 years. What product is the grandma using that crypto has generated for her? And there's none. There's no products.
The only thing I think he could like say was like stable coins, right?
I think your answer to that was like NFTs. And that was actually Brian's answer was NFTs.
Yeah. Yes, I think so. I mean, these ultimately.
But the thing is, it's not obvious. And like, so what are we doing here? So what are we trying to do, right? We're trying to allow for or disassociate the geographical positioning of people and onboard them into this financial ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's ultimately the goal.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess your question is, are we actually moving towards that direction?
Correct. Yeah. Are we getting closer to that? Or are we just like making more and more tools to like just build better like
fleece machines?
Yeah. There you go. Right. Yeah. If you're talking frank about it, and I get it, it's like a lot of people won't want to be that like honest and.
Well, it doesn't
with
matter.
That assessment?
I don't even think that they're even considering it. I think they don't even care. It doesn't matter.
That's what I mean.
It's like my motivation is here to make money. I was like, I don't care
right.
in what way that is. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, that's what I mean. Like that stems from that disingenuous, I guess. Mm. That stems from that bias is like, yeah, everyone's like in a collective understanding is like really it's just create these vehicles that are going to generate the most money. As quick as possible, right? Like, I think everybody is like almost aware of that.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't think so.
I don't know either, to be honest. But I think some people are, and they're really good at doing that.
Yeah.
Really, really, really good at doing that. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
But at the same time, I mean, maybe that's not the case. Maybe those rapid influx of like of capitalization and such is just a result of fulfilling actual true market demands.
Maybe right? so. Maybe so.
Yeah. I mean, the market, again, because if somebody doesn't step up and provides these fleece machine environments, then we really truly are stagnant, waiting around for the real innovation to occur. And real innovation, as we talked earlier, is really hard to do.
Yes, it is.
It takes a really long time.
Yeah. It's so, a huge risk, takes a lot of money, effort.
So maybe these fleece machines, the purpose of that as just to keep the market present long enough for like the true innovations to actually like
maybe
sustain
so.
Themselves. right?
Yeah, maybe so.
Otherwise, it's like crypto maybe actually does die as an industry, because if we're sitting around waiting for true innovation, I don't know. Like specifically in the L2 space, right now the innovation on the horizon seems to be BitVM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I've been hearing a lot of people.
Smart people.
Very smart people.
Yeah.
Like if you want something as close to like an actual true L2 on Bitcoin, then we're going to have to wait around for, you know, something like BitVM to actually be well integrated into this ecosystem. And who knows? That might be 6, 8, 12 months into the horizon.
Past the cycle.
Right.
It's so past the cycle that it doesn't even matter that's innovation. Mm-hmm. It's like it only matters if there's like a some angle where people can participate in.
Yeah. So that's you know, so something has to be in place to like maintain like the liquidity within the market, right?
Yeah.
Like that's important. That is part of like the whole ecosystem, I would imagine, right?
Yeah.
Potentially. I don't know. Just trying to analyze like everything as much as I can and come to an understanding.
Yeah. So everything that's happening is fine. Like it's part of like part of crypto. So everything that's happening now is like sort of expected to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And what we like to talk about is just the new stuff, right? Stuff that we haven't seen before, because it's just interesting. Like that's predominantly, we don't talk about art projects because there's nothing really to talk about. Right. And most of the stuff that happens on Twitter is sort of like visual to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times it's about art, and that's just not interesting.
Correct. I would say so.
Yeah.
But just because
we've
seen a lot of art, but this whole non-arbitrary art thing is injecting something new and interesting to it. So we're going to talk about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing that's happening with NatCats is this non-arbitrary art. So basically leveraging patterns on Bitcoin, leveraging patterns within the bits field, and then leveraging patterns within the block data, and then associating those patterns to attributes, rare attributes.
Correct.
And so that's what happened with NatCats.
Yeah.
And that's why we think it's interesting, because this is the first utilization of DMT for art.
Yeah.
And so that's a big deal. And it's a big deal that we didn't do it, right? We, like you were saying, like we thought that we had to like go and implement like utility and utilization of DMT to show as an example for others to copy and leverage and duplicate and create their own art, own stuff from it.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the case, but it didn't manifest in that way, at least not yet. So, but we're still definitely going to contribute, because it doesn't, the purpose and utility of unique non-arbitrary tokens doesn't end at art either, right?
No, it
there's
doesn't.
Application for this, you know, ubiquitously, just like, you know, the non-fungible token standard that's arbitrary, right? It still has utility and application.
Yeah.
And a very wide array of use cases, right?
So yeah, for sure.
We'll be contributing on that end. So will like the entire ecosystem, I imagine, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so that's a cool thing about DMT, is that it's a new piece of tool that you can leverage to create new stuff.
Yeah. Well, one thing we haven't done in a while, dude, is take a look at Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
Because Bitcoin's doing something that I guess is surprising even you. But I think I kind of made like a subtle hint that this might occur, right? Like an all-time high revisit pre-halving.
Yeah.
Now that potential is there. Like we're almost there.
Yeah, we got about 2 months. I mean, if we reach an all-time high, we're getting, you know, in the past the green area-ish.
Hold on. I don't think so, dude. Go back to that. No way.
It's like
barely in the green.
That's 69,000. That's all-time high. So it's
yeah, well, the top end of that green is like 90,000.
Yeah, that's
true. You feel me? So it's like 1/4 of the way through the green.
Yeah.
To hit all-time high. Like, come on, man.
It's definitely possible.
So what are we looking at here, first of all? Like, what is this again for people who don't know?
So we typically use Bitcoin as a signal of where things are going to be going, basically, for all of crypto. So as Bitcoin rises, everything else rises, essentially.
Well, Bitcoin, yeah, Bitcoin, it typically has always been like the leading force in market sentiment.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the OG. It is the one that started it all. So it commands that kind of market respect for sure.
Yeah.
Right. But that doesn't mean like little things don't happen independently of Bitcoin. They do.
They definitely do.
Yeah, like
all the whole BRC-20 was independent of Bitcoin.
Correct. Yeah. So I mean, there's little, of course, like individual market sectors that have like their own activities independent of that. But typically, whenever Bitcoin's on like priming itself for a run like this, where it seems like it's about to retest all-time highs and then enter price discovery zones.
Yeah.
The market is entirely focused on that, I would say, right?
You think so?
Mostly focused on that. Maybe not entirely. Yeah, dude, Bitcoin's, come on, dude.
Well, maybe like from like the human population, yeah, they're focused on that. But I think from like an opportunity, like talking about casino perspective, like people who enjoy casinos, I don't think they're like shoveling their cash and their assets into Bitcoin for like a 2x.
Right. But no, you're right. Yeah, from that lens, yeah, this isn't the most exciting casino.
Yeah, but 401k people, right. Institutions, if you're Michael Saylor, like you're shoveling your cash into Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that's where Bitcoin actually truly shines now, because not everybody likes casinos. Not everybody likes to be exposed to that amount of risk.
Yeah, 100%.
Actually, the large majority of people don't want that, but people do want to secure like their finances.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like they want to be sure it's like, you know, if some critical event happens in my life, like I'm accounted for in the future.
Yes.
Like that is an important part of like life management, right?
Yeah.
So now Bitcoin is being factored in to like these life decisions, right? Like that's never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we're making progress. We were just asking, it was like, when do we kind of like traverse this like casino-esque realm? That's true value right there, dude.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's so we have like the entire multi-trillion-dollar 401k ecosystem, and a portion of that money is going into Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and so all that means is that there's like a hidden floor for Bitcoin where it can't really go below that. I mean, it can.
Yeah,
it
definitely can.
But it has a less likelihood as a result of so much money being put into it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so it's providing a lot of value in that sense. Some sort of like actual semblance of true value. And that took a long time. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah,
that took 15 years, dude.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. The market can't wait around for another 15-year tranche to like figure out like what is the next true value derivative from like, you know, crypto economy. It's like we need people to remain present. We need people to remain engaged and have a desire to develop the next things, right?
Yeah, I mean, and innovation is happening, right? Every cycle there's like new stuff, right? Yeah. So we have new stuff with ordinals, right? And DMT and BRC20s, like all these things have never been done before.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, so I guess I guess anything innovative is like making progress to a certain extent, because you're always building on like a previous innovation, right?
Yeah. I mean, innovation, maybe that's too strong of a word. Just experimentation, just like something new, a new experiment. So what do L2s provide? I guess like a higher velocity environment.
Efficiency, cost efficiency.
So that results in higher velocity of like, you know, different experimentation, maybe deployment.
Well, I think itself. More of like it enables different markets. Like if you're creating a metaverse and you need like low fees to like transact within the metaverse, like L2 is your best bet.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to do that on Bitcoin.
Yeah. We've seen that on Ethereum for sure. It's like most of the GameFi ecosystem is plugged into some sort of L2, right?
Correct.
Whether it's Immutable X, Polygon, Arbitrum, yada, 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 right? The list goes on and on.
Yeah.
That is clearly like a clear utility, right, for L2. It's got to be done that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I guess the idea of L2s is just extracting liquidity from where it's at, which is Bitcoin, and porting it into another chain, which has a little bit more centralization, but faster, cheaper, and opens up different markets that Bitcoin can't enable.
Correct. Yeah, so at the end of the day, these are really just trade-offs that some people are comfortable making them, some people are not. At the end of the day, it's just hopefully this industry matures a little bit, and it's like communications, I guess, just making sure they're being authentic with their like their intentions, and like, you know, making sure people who are, you know, participating in this stuff, they're well aware of all the risks and potential downfalls of that, because I don't think a lot of people are.
Yeah, every cycle, man. Every time like cryptocurrency hits the bear cycle, everything starts going down. Cryptocurrency is looked at as a large scam.
Because of that, largely. It's like a lot of people tell people things like that they want to hear without disclosing the potential risks involved in all this. Mm-hmm. And then people have to experience it firsthand, and it's like, fuck, like I got duped. I didn't know. I thought I was putting my money into like the next internet.
Yeah.
Right? With all the beautiful smoke and mirrors that were laid in front of them.
Yeah, blue skies and rainbows.
Yeah, by these founders, right? These protocol deployers that aren't like, and because they don't have the motivation to inspire like potential fear in their user base, right?
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's like, I don't want them to know that, you know, this is actually very risky. You're trusting me a lot more than you potentially should.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Things like this, right? You know, they're taking advantage of that sector of the market, right?
Sure.
And then you build a bull cycle out of that. Mm-hmm. And you attract more people using these same tactics.
Yeah, and that's why we try to focus on like fundamental analysis. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't talk about meme coins and art projects and all that, because there's not a whole lot fundamentally supporting any of these things. Mm. Right? And so I'm sort of like of the kind that would like to sleep at night and not worry about, and here's the thing. It's like you make a fundamental decision. It's like, I'm going to get entertained by this particular asset, right? And if for whatever reason that asset like ends up going to zero, mm-hmm. I would have made the same decision going back, mm. right? And that's what I use as like a metric, is like, am I okay with whatever happens with this asset?
Correct.
Even if it goes to zero.
Yeah.
And usually the answer is yes for pretty much everything that I do.
So then what's driving that decision in the first place?
Fundamental analysis.
Right.
It's
but if it goes to zero, that means like it wasn't fundamentally.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because you're not ever going to be right every single time with even fundamental analysis. But in general, but the whole point of fundamental analysis is to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
It's like you've made a decision with all things considered. It was a well-researched decision.
Yeah. I see that angle, of course. And yeah, that's just your threshold of risk tolerance, and that's fine. That's you as a demographic.
Yes, correct.
You know, but there's a lot of people out there, like they don't have much like to work with. Like I recall my days back in 2017. That's what got me started.
Yeah.
In this whole market. I was just like everybody else who's out there. You know, I started with like $1,000, maybe two at most.
Yeah.
And that's all I could get my hands on at the time. You know, what's his name? I'm definitely no Warren Buffett in the making. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I discovered like through participating in these markets, you can identify these opportunities where like a couple hundred bucks can turn into $20,000.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy. So
yeah, but you can still do that with fundamental analysis too. You don't have to like bet on like some weird shit out there. Like with Tao. Like Tao is like a great fundamental analysis like project.
Correct, of course. But, you know.
And it still did a 10X.
Yeah. But those are way harder to find.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a lot more research and understanding.
For sure.
And
but man,
they're more scarce.
You put in money into something like that, you can sleep at night.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like
there's a lot of hungry people who like can't sleep at night already. Like outside of like, where's my money invested in? It's like, I can't sleep at night because like my kids can't even afford to feed my kids.
Right.
It's like, I'm desperate, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
got to go less, in there. Even less likely, it's a bad decision to be going, spending your last grand on like rats.
Of course,
token.
Of course it's a bad decision, but desperation, like it typically makes you do stuff like that.
Right. But there's a higher probability.
Yes.
That rats goes to zero.
But there is some probability, like my $200 that I could have used to pay for groceries for the entire month.
Sure.
And my kids don't go hungry.
$10,000.
Goes to $2,000. And now, fuck, I could take my kids to, you know, CC's Pizza. And I don't fucking know. What's the reward? What's a reward nowadays? No, definitely not CC's. Something better than that. Dave and Buster's, you know?
Yeah. Talk about fleece machine.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Obviously, I'm not a good dad here. It's like I score in the market. It's like off to CC's, guys. This is how we celebrate in our household.
It's like, what year is this, dude?
Then I go out there looking for a CC's. It's like not one in town anymore. It's like a fucking completely failed franchise, dude.
Yeah, Chuck E. Cheese.
But I remember my childhood, CC's was the bee's knees. So.
Yeah, I remember going there.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
But the point is, I don't know, dude. It's just there's a wide spectrum of risk tolerance, right?
It's funny. CC's was right next to the gym.
It was. Like right literally, next to it.
The doors were right next to each other. It was insane.
Yeah. It was like the ultimate like conundrum. You know, I was like, I'm going to get my gains in. You're like,
and then
fuck.
Some pizza.
Yeah, you walk right out in the other dude's like, what a waste.
Dude, it's crazy.
Complete waste. I think I did that for like a couple of years. It's like work out and just get fatter. It's like, what's happening, dude? This is not how it's supposed to go down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is a simulation for sure.
Okay. I don't know how you got there, but I agree with you for sure at the end of all this. So yeah, what's the takeaway from everything we just said?
Yeah, I mean if crypto, dude. If you're down to your last $1,000, I don't know if rats is the best use of those funds.
Yeah, it's all about, I mean, so this is gonna happen. If you're new to this space, I mean, you're probably gonna get burnt by the end of this cycle. Just a disclosure. Because everybody does. Everyone I've ever known who's like gotten involved in this market, they've gotten burnt.
Everybody, including us.
Yeah.
Everybody who's touched anything crypto, everybody's been burnt.
Somehow, one way or another.
Yeah.
And depending on the scope of that burn is dependent entirely on how much you risk.
On your risk threshold, yeah.
Yeah, like if you risk it all, you're going to get really burnt.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? If you just risk a little bit, it's going to sting a little bit. You're going to be like, fuck, I guess I am stupid. You know, but it's okay. You'll be able to recover from that like a week later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's fine. You're gonna live, right? But just so that's the PSA. Just anything new you see out there that's like the new shiny thing in the room.
Yeah,
everybody's gonna try and convince you. It's like you need to be, you know, putting your money there.
That's
but,
right.
But just, please, just be cautious about it and like try your best to like, you know,
just be reasonable. Like, yeah, don't go all in on anything because
the Project Telegram says that the number only goes up though.
Exactly. It's like this Telegram has nothing but rocket emojis telling me like this is not gonna like pan out.
Yeah. Moon soon.
Right. Exactly. So that gets like you can get drunk off that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hopium.
The hopium. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
That's a real thing, dude.
It's absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, how do you distinguish what's a fundamental project and what's, you know, just vaporware, hopium? That's not easy to do. And that's, I mean, if you go back to the history of this podcast, we talked about a lot of like fundamental stuff that panned out pretty well and some stuff didn't.
That's true. I think we have a pretty decent track record, I think.
Yeah. We're just not motivated to like go back and like tell everybody how right we were.
Yeah. I would say so. But really, it's about like, we've talked about it plenty of times.
Yeah.
These trends mean a big deal. If you're trying to like really understand how the market moves, trends kind of like dictate, navigate everything.
Yeah.
All these squiggly lines, maybe not so much for Bitcoin, because Bitcoin kind of like has its own like rhythm and life of its own. Right.
Yeah, dude, Bitcoin doesn't care about anything.
It really doesn't. Yeah.
Like it might get affected by like these black swan events like COVID. But that was like,
yeah, but even like
a few days.
Yeah, and when you really actually look at it, like that little blip is it getting
this right
affected?
Here.
Yeah, like
that's COVID.
That's really not being affected.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
If COVID never happened, it would have been a straight line here. And that's it.
Maybe. Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, I mean Bitcoin is pretty resilient, pretty staunch in its like its value persistence, I guess.
Yeah.
That's why it's transcending like the casino realm, I think.
Yeah, anybody who's new in crypto and they say, "Hey, what should I do?" I usually say just you know, DCA, dollar cost average into Bitcoin and just don't worry about it. Just doesn't matter if it's really high or really low, it doesn't matter. Just use that and just go in and just forget about it.
Yeah.
Because if you just wait long enough, number
does number go up, dude.
It does go up.
It's actually programmed.
It pretty much is.
Pretty much, dude. If there's anything that's programmed to like only go up and to the right, it's Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't, then like this whole thing just kind of falls apart.
It is.
So it's working.
And yeah, and a lot of this is like a lot of energy is being put into Bitcoin. A lot of energy.
Yeah.
And that's why we like, you know, DMT a lot, because we leverage that energy in the form of a non-arbitrary token.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the couple of weeks have been doing research on thermodynamics. And like, who the hell talks about thermodynamics and cryptocurrency in the same breath? Just us, dude. It's just us.
Talk about innovating on the marketing front, dude. Good luck with that, dude. Good luck making people like care.
Yeah.
About thermodynamics, dude.
That's, you know, it's funny. It's because everyone actually does care about thermodynamics. They just don't know it. That's a crazy thing.
You're going to have to explain. Explain harder, dude.
You know, putting fuel in your car. That is a result of a natural process of thermodynamics.
I do enjoy having my car running. That's for sure.
Yes.
I would prefer my car to function.
And that energy.
What else, dude?
What else? Electricity.
What about like eating food? Is that like a thermodynamic
Absolutely. Process? Absolutely. Every single thing that happens in the universe is a thermodynamic process. Everything.
Interesting.
Moving this little guy forward is a thermodynamic process.
What about backward?
Same.
Interesting. We're still waiting for the tie to crypto and all this and non-arbitrary tokens.
But well,
I get it. I'm just pulling your leg. Of course, I understand it. But yeah, I'm just trying to paint the picture of like how difficult.
Like why would thermodynamics matter in my entertainment decisions?
Yeah, why do I want to go to the thermodynamics casino?
Well, because we were just
I mean? Out of all the casinos, like I choose so, like, from
it's thermodynamics.
Yeah, this one's like a fucking future casino, bro.
Yeah,
like all that stuff, you know.
Because we're talking about fundamental analysis, and what is more fundamental than thermodynamics?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Physics, right?
Yeah,
right, and so. I mean, it doesn't get more fundamental than that. It's like equating value to a process, a thermodynamic process.
Yeah.
Like you cannot get more fundamental than that.
I agree. We had this discussion, I think a few weeks back or a couple of weeks back, of like the why for DMT, right? We've really been struggling. It's like putting together the why in a very concise and cohesive like dialogue.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like if we're going to just perpetually erect these like virtual casinos and such and partake in them for entertainment value, whatever, it seems like the one that has like the actual biggest potential of manifesting something as close to matter that we've ever like devised in the digital economic realm, like it makes the most sense. Like our participation in this could potentially actually output something that we can't even foresee that might actually be really, 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 truly, like intangibly valuable into the future.
Yeah, 100%.
Whether that's applied to the metaverse space, somehow that has like some actual physical ramification, we don't know.
Yeah.
Why? Because we're taking advantage of like the innate properties of Bitcoin that are closely aligned to physics, like you're saying, right?
Yeah. You know, the I don't know if it was a podcast or it was a 20-minute video that we did, but we were talking about sort of like this subject, and we were talking about thermodynamics, and there was an article that we're reading where it said that the only scarce substance in the universe is a digital item. It's digital, like essentially digital matter. Yeah. Why? Because if you play out long enough, we will develop a technology that will allow us to manipulate atoms. And when you can do that, you can turn this into a table or turn this into
or a Hershey Kiss.
Or, yeah.
Really?
We can manipulate the atoms to make a Hershey Kiss.
And I can literally eat it.
And literally eat it.
Wow.
It is I believe atomically you. Identical.
Okay.
We got to get Neil deGrasse Tyson on here.
We definitely do.
And Michio Kaku and all those guys, dude. Let's just have a bro fest talking about. So what? That's nanotechnology, right? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah. And so what does that mean? So if we can develop the technology to manipulate atoms, we can create anything. Diamonds, gold, all of that is abundant.
Interesting.
Right? And according to this article talking about thermodynamics, the only thing that's not abundant is something like Bitcoin. something like digital space, because you can't just manufacture that, especially when you consider all the energy is being put into Bitcoin. That is the only thing that is scarce in the universe.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy when you think about it. Like the most artificial of things.
Yeah.
Artificially created has become like the most.
The most scarcest of things.
Yeah. Like, damn. That's pretty wild.
And then you like apply that to like this whole DMT thing. It's like, man, it's like this is real digital substance, like digital matter. Mm-hmm. And in the same way that you find fossil fuels and oil and all that stuff being actual commodities, like this is a digital version of that. Mm. And like, yeah, the rules are going to be different as a result, right? You know, physical commodities and digital commodities, they don't have to play by the same rules, right? One is bound by the laws of physics. Another one's bound by, you know, just like this non-arbitrary scarcity that is just built into it.
Yeah.
Right. And so, man, it's like, it's different. The stuff that we're dealing with is new stuff, basically.
Oh yeah. It's super new. And that is a challenge, and that's the road that we're on. And I feel it now more than ever. It's like every new thing that looks like we're pushing the needle forward for the DMT space.
Yeah.
It every single time it blows my mind. And I'm not used to this happening because I've seen it all in crypto, right? So yeah. Like, it's pretty hard to like actually be like
surprised,
dumbfounded by something.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the space is like, probably shares that same sentiment if you've been around longer than one or two cycles.
Yeah.
Like we've literally seen pretty much it all. And like, it's really, really hard to find like something truly unique and new. Look at the market on Ethereum completely like losing their mind over ERC-404s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, cause that's the first time they've seen something new in a while. Right.
Yeah. So much new, it like trickled into like the Bitcoin ecosystem.
Correct. Yeah.
So. And we're just talking about fractionalizing NFTs. Like just because we're doing it on a smart contract doesn't change the results of fractionalizing stuff before. It doesn't change anything.
Mm. Well, it changes just like the, I don't know, maybe the friction of it all. And
Friction wasn't
one less step.
Friction was not why fractionalization in cryptocurrency did not work. It wasn't like, oh, because we have to rely on third parties. That is not why it didn't work.
Yeah, I guess with any and like locking mechanisms, they could always be like abstracted out into like a liquid staked initiative, right? It's like, yeah, you have to lock everything up to fractionalize it. Well, then you can just generate a new asset that's locked, you know, synthetic versions. We do this in crypto, right? But yeah, so this whole avenue that we've created, it's like, man, yeah, it truly feels original and unique for sure. I don't know. I guess you guys in the comments, let us know. You get the same vibes that we do from this? I do genuinely want to know. Like, or are we just like in our own like mental space, mental bubble? Like this actually doesn't hold value. I guess we have the market now to kind of like actually tell us.
Yeah.
That's the interesting part.
That is the whole point. It's like a lot of this stuff in theory is like a cool conversation, but not until you put it into practice do you get to see like its actual impact. Mm-hmm. And that is the whole point of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's it for us. That's been a whole hour of like talking about L2s.
Basically things that we already talked about like off cam.
Yeah.
Just do it all over again, dude. Just rehash it.
You know, I think that's like probably one thing that is probably not easy to understand is that when we turn off the cameras, we're still talking about this shit.
Yeah, we have to. It's because there's nothing else really that interests us. Well, that's not true. That's for you. There's nothing else that you want to talk about, right? If I'm like, dude, well, I mean, did you watch the Grammys last week?
Hell no, dude.
You're like, dude, fuck off with that noise, dude, right?
We had a Super Bowl conversation, lasted all 45 seconds.
That's right. It's like, yeah, it's like it's faked and rigged, right? It's like, yeah, pretty much. Okay.
That was a whole setup by Biden.
That's right. It's like, let's move on, dude. So, of course, we're going to talk about this because, I mean, it truly is the most interesting thing to talk about, I think.
Yeah.
At least from our perspective.
I mean, is there objectively something more interesting?
Probably. Yeah, there probably is. Most likely, yes.
All right, yeah. Let us know in the comment section below.
What's more interesting?
What's more interesting than cryptocurrency right now? Just like Yeah. Put it in the comment section. It could be anything.
Yeah.
Right? The whole range in this simulation is up for grabs.
All right. Yeah. Let us know. Because, yeah, once maybe we'll expand our podcast into, like, if it's truly more interesting, then let's talk about it, dude.
Yeah. I guess the only competitor would be AI. That's absolutely.
It's interesting, but I mean,
yeah. It's definitely interesting. We cannot cannot poo-poo that. Fusion energy is another one. Fusion energy is vastly interesting.
See, you're just going to keep going down the list. Bioengineering, is sure. that not interesting?
Yeah, that is interesting.
Okay. Fucking nanotech. We just talked about that.
Very absolutely interesting.
The cosmos
is interesting. Absolutely interesting.
What about like Fortnite?
No, definitely not.
Okay, that's where we... Cut it off there, dude. All right.
All right, guys. That's it for us. That's been the Blockrunner podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation. And yeah, like I said earlier, put a comment in there. Share this with people, humans.
They're all people, not just people you hate.
Yeah, definitely. Because
if you didn't like it.
Yeah, because we get those emails like, I hated this podcast.
I'm sure we do.
Yeah, that's it for us. Appreciate you. And we will catch you in the next podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Blockrunner podcast. Make sure you visit the website at theblockrunner.com and sign up to stay up to date on the latest crypto. Reach out to us on Twitter at theblockrunner.